Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the May 2, 2021 session, focusing on 1 John chapter 4, verses 7 through 21. Love is the whole thing. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Bert Montgomery.
And I'm David Adams.
When I was a kid, I didn't like certain things. Okay, so I'm going to go first here. So my mom really liked cheese. And she would just snack on cheese, and cut her up some cheese and crackers, and just, you know, and she would constantly try to get me to enjoy it. It's just the most wonderful thing, David. You'll like it. And she enjoyed it so much. And I hated cheese, despised it, didn't want it on anything, and certainly wasn't going to eat it straight up. But as I grew older and matured, and my palate, I guess, changed. I mean, now I love cheese. I like all kind. Well, not all kind. I don't like blue cheese. That is vile. But all the other kinds of cheeses, especially the really hard cheeses. I love a really hard cheese. those are all good. But I look back and I go, why did I like cheese then? Because I think she would have loved to have shared that with me, that love of cheese. But I just wasn't ready. But so I guess I'm curious for you. Is there anything that you used to dislike that you have learned to love?
You know, love is a strong word. But there's something I used to strongly dislike. In fact, we might say hate, mm-hmm. that I've learned to kind of enjoy sometimes. And that is Journey, the music of Journey. with the exception of a few songs, with the exception of, that I still absolutely hate. But by and large, it does take me back to a wonderful time in my life of junior high and early high school and lots of friends and bring back memories. So, yes, so, I would not say love, but I can tolerate and sometimes even sing along, you know, when the lights go off in the city.
Dear listeners, you have to understand that we have spent the last hour trying to get ready for this podcast with Bert interjecting every few minutes a new hatred of certain songs or groups, most of them from the 70s, which is a bit sacrilegious. But just so you know, that's why we're chuckling.
Yeah.
But now he runs to them with open arms. You know? So
no. No, that's still on my bad list.
Oh. Well, I have one that's kind of weird. I used to, when I was growing up, I really didn't like the Village People. They were just not part of my experience. You know, I could not connect with them in any way. Didn't understand them. Like, why is everybody so into this group? But now that I'm old, they're just a hoot. I just love them.
They're a trip.
They really are. You know, when I was young, I'd never do it. But now I just love to hang out.
You are a macho man.
That's right. I even know the motions, you know, and all that stuff. It's great.
Presidential dance.
There you go.
So I will, mine's not nearly as funny, but I'm going to go with sweet potatoes. I used to not like sweet potatoes at all. I thought they were awful in any shape, form, or fashion. And now I love them. Sweet potato pie, sweet potato fries, sweet potatoes just mashed up, sweet potato tater tots. At one of the sports venues here in Atlanta, they have sweet potato tater tots, and they are so good. Yeah, sweet potatoes. Yeah.
Even a baked potato with like real butter and cinnamon and sugar.
A little brown sugar sprinkled on top. That's all you got to do. Pop it in the microwave or put it in the oven. Yeah, it's real good. So and a pinch of salt. A pinch of salt too on it with the sugar.
So nowadays when someone says, who's going to eat these sweet potatoes? You say, I am.
I never want to agree with anything that you say, David Adams, because I don't know what the reference is and if I am and if I'm setting myself up.
Well, we continue in our study of 1 John, the book of 1 John. David, would you help us get started with our continuing conversation about love?
Sure. If you listen to this podcast very much, you may have heard me sound off on this before. But I know that I am in good company when I point out that I really get tired of all the drug commercials on TVs these days. We're sitting there watching the Hallmark movie, there's really only one after all, and they fill in the blanks with different people between shows. But these commercials constantly bombard us. If you keep track of such things like I do, you might even notice that about a quarter of the shows you watch is taken up by these commercials. And as Martin Sheen will tell you, the drugs aren't cheap either. Unless there's a bathroom or snack break happening, I have very little to do while these commercials are on. So I sometimes log into a discount prescription app on my phone to see that most of these drugs cost well north of $1,000 a month to use, and some cost over $4,000. I have no idea how much of that cost is used on commercials, but I suspect it's a pretty fair amount. Now, if you're unable to afford that, the drug companies might be able to help. They're just very unlikely to. If they wanted to give people a price break, these commercials would be less likely to be popping up all over the place to begin with. Of course, I am not here to whine about drug commercials. But if you'll call my toll-free number, I'd like to talk to you about getting an extended warranty for your car. Seriously, people talk too much about too many things we don't care about. It can get annoying. Sometimes they talk too much about the things that we really do care about, too. But it seems some time to get to the point. If you get the feeling that people are using way too many words in hopes of making those words seem more important, I'm right there with you. It's almost as if people blather on and on incessantly about every little thing, hoping to engage your imagination because they have little to say that would otherwise capture it due to an excess of self-important verbosity that continuously mounts until you come to the point where you can barely stand it because you cannot truly follow what they're trying to say and care very little about what they probably would be saying if they were actually using the words designed to speak to you in your unique situation, since they can't possibly know your unique situation and the fact that whatever they have to say couldn't possibly match up to your perspective on it, outsiders as they are. It's the sort of thing that makes people use 122-word sentences. We use words because they give us control. To name something is a sort of apprehend it in our minds. But there is a place where words can't go, a place where we have to sort of feel our way in the face of something larger than we can comprehend. A little while ago, my daughter asked me how she could know if she loved someone or was loved. After a little thinking, I told her that love is something that has to be felt. If you could define boundaries and criteria for it, setting conditions as it were, it's not exactly love. It requires faith and trust, but also the willingness to accept those things that transcend language. To me, love comes from that same place where art, play, and passion live. It's where we can sort of find God, who is likewise far beyond what mere words can say. Small wonder, then, that when John tries to talk to his little congregation about love, he sort of waters around a bit, and he likely uses way too many words to make his case. I know that there are important theological points to be made in 1 John 4, and when I was in seminary, this chapter was one of those we had to seriously unpack as part of our Greek exegesis course. Still, whenever I read this passage, I tend to distill it down to a few lines. One of those comes pretty close to something I preach about almost every week. Since God loved us so much, we also ought to love one another. You'd think this is a no-brainer, but apparently it isn't. It's as if we take the love of God for granted, to the point where it's just our thing, not something that's made more tangible in the sharing. Still, I can almost see some old-timer looking at a young person saying, "Well, it seems to me that since God loved us so much, we also ought to love one another." This is just common sense, right? Of course, we're pretty fond of quoting this passage when it says, "Perfect love casts out all fear." It shows up in a lot of songs, especially the Daniel Bailey classic pop song. It's pretty much everywhere else, really. I think it's supposed to be a testament to the power love has to get us to do things we might not otherwise do, like maybe trust people or reach out to people who everyone else has given up on. That's not all this means, though. In fact, if you parse out the Greek, you discover that the word that is translated as perfect can also mean complete. Loving someone completely means not being afraid of them. It doesn't really matter how good you are at doing it. And to be honest, most of us are pretty terrible at loving others. so much as you're willing to try. In other words, as imperfect as my love might be, I'm willing to offer all of it up to something, and I'm not going to be afraid of it. Imperfect as I am, if I go all in, I don't have to fear anything holding me back. And I know we're just nitpicking here, but I also love to hear John say, those who say, I love God, and hate their brothers and sisters are liars. For those who do not love a brother and sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. By this point, he's just rehashing what he's already been saying, that we're supposed to love each other. Still, there's an interesting contrast here between that unseen world that lies beyond our words and the very present physical world we encounter every day. We see no end of people these days that are quick to proclaim their love of God. They wear the right clothes, display the right symbols, sing the right songs, watch the correct movies, even use the language of Zion, as it were. Funny, then, how people who are out to make such an ostentatious show of their love for God have such a hard time demonstrating that through the way they treat others. I don't know about you, but I don't want to hear people proclaim their love for God. I want to feel the love of God sweeping over me as I watch people go out of their way to do the right thing. I want to feel God's love from someone who I wouldn't think likes people like me. I need to know that God's love leads people to confront those systems and people who deny love and acceptance to other people. I need to know that other people know that God loves me despite who I voted for, who I love, what I look like, how much I have, what languages I speak, where I came from, or even how I choose to identify myself. I know it's hard for people to do these things, but if they're really committed to loving completely, they have nothing to be afraid of. If you can't demonstrate that you know God loves me without any sorts of preconditions, don't try to sell me on the idea that you love God. I ain't buying it, and I'm pretty sure that God isn't either.
Thanks for that intro, Dave. You have this real interesting talent of mixing humor with real meaning. And I have to say, I was recalling an experience. You remember Catherine Chapman? David and I were in class together in seminary, and Professor Chapman, she taught several courses, but in particular children's ministry courses. And one of her favorite, and I can't remember, I can't quote it precisely, but her favorite kind of phrases was this notion that there is a math to love, that love multiplies. Love doesn't divide. You know, it's kind of corny, but it is a reminder, I think, of some of the themes that you were hitting on in your comments about this sense that love is really an unlimited renewable resource, that it's not scarce. It's not something we have to guard and hide and ration out to the right people at the right times, that it really is this abundance that we're called to share and to call to realize that there is that math. Sharing love multiplies it. And if we're trying to divide our love and limit it, that's probably, as you were suggesting, apart from what God wills.
Sometimes I read this and I've got this highlighted in the middle of the passage because it stands out to me. But there's something in here that I can take as bad news. I think they meant it as good news, but I sometimes take it as bad news. That's verse 19. It's very simple. It just says, we love because he first loved us. And it makes you wonder, why didn't we love because love is in us? Love is what made us. Love is what called us. Why did someone have to do it for us first before we were willing to turn around and give up whatever measly love we had?
So what you're asking is, why can't we give love?
Yeah.
To quote the Zoroastrian philosopher, theologian, and his friends, I'm going to mispronounce his name, Farouk Bulsara.
Yeah.
Why can't we give love, right? Because love's such an old-fashioned word, and love dares you. Love dares you to care for the people on the edge of night, and love dares you to change our way of caring about ourselves. That's powerful stuff.
David, your question really has me thinking. And I think what I'm caught between is the question sounds much deeper than where I'm going with it. But I'll just go with where I'm going. Your question makes me think about that we live in a culture that deflates love, or maybe that cheapens love. We use the word love to sell things. We try to commodify it. We try to convince people that there's not enough of it. And so I think that the way that culture right now treats love makes it difficult for us to want to give it away, to share it, to offer to other people. And maybe that's been true always. But I think that's something that happens now, that we cheapen it so much in our own culture and society that it either doesn't feel like it has the weight that it can, or we're afraid if we give it away that there won't be any more. This passage is in direct contradiction to that, right? I mean, I think that's, you were about to say something.
I was going to say that something that I heard you say last week, which we can think all the way back to last week because it's so long ago. But something I heard you say last week got me thinking too. As you're trying to unpack this, we look on love in very transactional terms.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, we've made it into something that's transactional, not something that just is. Mm. You know, something that has a life of its own, something that God has created for us.
And I think if we can change the way that we see love, we can also free ourselves from what we think love might require of us. Like last week, Bert said, I can figure out how to love somebody and not like them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if we say we love someone, we think that there has to be this intimate, close, familial, or romantic kind of relationship, but that doesn't necessarily have to be true. We can be freed of what we think love is supposed to be when we can learn to think of love in non-transactional ways.
I really liked one of the phrases you used, David. You said, to me, love comes from that same place where art, play, and passion live. It's where we can sort of find God, who is likewise far beyond what mere words can say. And I think that's really interesting. The same place where art, play, and passion live. Because it is something that words struggle as we are doing to try to fully express, right? Mm-hmm. But if we know, I mean, I love art museums, and I know if I encounter a piece or an artist that I really connect with, I mean, I can love a piece of art. I know what that is. That's a kind of feeling and expression and connection that's hard to describe, which is why we get weird language when we talk about art, right? Or music.
Mm-hmm. And David, you even said, I love that you said, I need to feel that love. And I think that was such a beautiful statement. And I felt very connected when you said that. I said, I do too. That is something that I need to feel also from other people is to feel that love that doesn't require anything of me. And what a gift it is when that kind of love is given.
I keep hearing that phrase, love that doesn't require anything of me. And it is just like y'all said, it's just so contrary, not only to our culture, but also to so much of our Christian tradition that has taught us that God, as David mentioned last week, the yeah buts. God loves you, yeah, but you have to do this first. And that's not the case. God just loves you. And perhaps, you know, when Jesus is asked about the greatest commandment, it's love God, and it's not a second, it's and together, love your neighbor as yourself. And we have a hard time loving ourselves as we are because mm-hmm. we're taught to see ourselves as always needing improvement, as always needing fixing, as always broken and failures at this or that or the other. Or we love ourselves too much, which leads to narcissism in this type of exchange love mm-hmm. and productivity love. And that's not what this kind of love is. That's not what God is. And of course, 1 John is God is love. And it's just, it's so that love without requiring anything of us, if we could even learn to love ourselves without requiring anything of ourselves, would be a start. To love as God first loves us without requiring anything of us.
Earlier in my academic career, one of the ways that I made money to make it through was working in psychiatric hospitals with children and youth. And it was really for me a wake up that not everyone knows love. Not everyone knows that they are loved. Not everyone is raised in a household where love is the thing. Because we talk about, you know, what's the phrase? God first loved us. Mm-hmm. Some people don't know the first love, right? Mm-hmm. That,
yeah.
And I was stunned to see these children in many cases coming in, and they were damaged because they had not known love. And so they didn't know how to love other people, or much less themselves. Good grief. And so much of our work, I found, and I was just a psych tech, right? I just carried out the psychiatrist orders. But a lot of that was to create a safe place for the children where they could feel loved. And so I have vivid memories of celebrating Thanksgivings and Christmases with these children who had no home to go back to. And we were as close as they had to family. And we would bring in these big meals, and we would try to make it as we knew what it was like. They didn't know. And trying to share that with them, I guess it was just a real sobering sense that while we can sit here and go, you know, well, it's just so obvious. God first loved us, and so we love others. Sometimes our love that we show to someone else is the first love. Or maybe.
And even then, those that we are giving that kind of love to, or for some of us who are on the receiving end of that kind of love, don't understand how to take it.
Oh, yeah.
And we will fight, and we will kick, and we will scream, and we will do whatever we can to reject that kind of love, but that love still surrounds us.
Yeah, it takes time. It's not a... Because, I mean, they're only used to transactional often.
Yeah.
Right. And
so is this just another transaction? What do you want from me?
Right.
And I will say, too, that I feel like sometimes, like, the Black Lives Matter movement is at its base a call for love. It's just a call to be loved. That's a pretty easy call to answer. To say, you are loved. I love you.
Yeah.
Isn't this fun, you know?
I'd like to pull in the possum. Some George Jones. George Jones, the possum, no show. And if you're a country music fan, you know what I'm talking about. But his classic song, considered by many the greatest classic song ever, He Stopped Loving Her Today. And it always reminds me, because this, what we're talking about from 1 John, mm-hmm. and then 2 John and 3 John and the Gospel of John and all this stuff, is not new to the New Testament. Because Jeremiah and the prophets have a hard time accepting the fact that God eventually still loves the people who are kicking and screaming and running away every single chance they get. And sooner or later, like Jonah at Nineveh, I want to see you blow these people to bits, and God doesn't do it. And, you know, Jeremiah wails, I don't understand what you're doing, God. But, you know, and I think of He Stopped Loving Her Today, when the wife, the cheating wife, leaves her faithful husband, who lovingly just waits for her to come home again. And then the chorus, you know, she came to see him one last time. And we were all wondering if she would. And it kept running through my mind, this time he's over her for good. He stopped loving her today. They placed the wreath on his door. And soon they'll carry him away. He stopped loving her today. And yes, Jeremiah, throughout Jeremiah, says we're that cheating wife. I mean, he's pretty blunt about it. And he seems mad that he has to say this, but God is still going to keep loving us. And even when God comes to us in Christ and we put the put him in the tomb, the stone gets rolled away and Christ lives, because God doesn't stop loving us even then. And God will not stop loving us. And that's that kind of love without requirements on our part.
Sometimes I like to pick a single artist and listen to them while I work. Today it's been Willie Nelson.
Woo-hoo.
And
that would be Saint Willie.
Saint Willie, yes. And sometimes music, like Adam said, has a way of expressing things that we struggle with. And even though I'm not going to sing this, the lyrics themselves and the poetry of them perhaps expresses a bit of the effects of love. That if you are like me, experiencing the love of others, it gives us purpose. It gives us meaning. It gives us the motivation often to make it through what can be difficult days or hard days. That the love gives us a path forward. And maybe part of our faith experience and faith journey is recognizing that the love of Christ that is given to us and that we are called to share with others helps us know where to go and what to do. So these are lyrics from a song called Just in Time by Willie Nelson. Just a little short song, about 2.5 minutes long. These are the lyrics. Just in time. I found you just in time. Before you came, my time was running low. I was lost. The losing dice were tossed. My bridges all were crossed. Nowhere to go. Now that you're here, now that I know just where I'm going, no more doubt or fear. I found my way. For love came just in time. You found me just in time. And changed my lonely life that lovely day. Now you're here, and now I know just where I'm going. No more doubt or fear, I found my way. For love came just in time. You found me just in time. And changed my lonely life that lovely day. You changed my life that lovely day. Good words from St. Willie. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.